The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, man, game one of the NBA Finals is already better than what we saw in the conference finals matchup. So let's get right into it. Boston ended up winning game one, 120 to 108. And it was just a back and forth game to start. I mean, like, first it looked like Golden State was going to run away with it in the first quarter. You had Steph Curry dropping a finals record 6 3-pointers in the first quarter, and he just could not be stopped. And then second quarter, and Steph is sitting for a little bit, but then all of a sudden Boston turns it on. They're getting some defensive stops, and then they're knocking down the shots that they need to make. And then all of a sudden halftime rolls around, and Boston's got the lead. But then the third quarter, and Golden State just they get back on it, and they're just running away with it again. And it looks like, hey, this is going to be going Golden State's way. And going into the fourth quarter, it wasn't too bad for Golden State. But then just all of a sudden, Al Horford just really turned it on. He hit 6 3-pointers in the fourth quarter as well, Just the rest of this Boston Celtics team just turned it on defensively and offensively, and they just couldn't be stopped. I think they went on like a 14-0 run, and they just started blowing the gates out, and they ended up taking game one. Like I said, it was a back and forth game, it could have gone either way, but man, Boston got stole one right in San Francisco. And it was just a great matchup, and I'm looking forward to game two. Hopefully the rest of the series is like this, just because both teams really battled it out. You really had no idea how the game was going to end up until about like the last 4 minutes, because Boston was just, they were just on some during the fourth quarter. And it seemed like Golden State was starting to get desperate with all of the 3-point shots, especially towards the end. Once Boston went on their 14-0 run, you could just see that Golden State was like, they were just scrambling to try and get any type of shot they could, and they were just tossing up threes when they could have just tried to at least set up some plays and get some easy scores rather than the 3-pointers that they were tossing up. But also at the same time, they did start off the game hitting nonstop threes, so I understand why they fell in love with the three, because that's their game. But, Boston just really, they got game one win, so good for them. Game two was going to be on Sunday back in San Francisco, so we'll see what happens in that one. But Golden State's really got to step it up and make sure they get the win. One thing I did notice is that all the Boston Celtic players are wearing the number 24, kind of like in the shoulder area. They have like a little black strip, and it says number 24 on it. And it's obviously for Kobe Bryant, which I kind of think is weird, because Kobe Bryant was a Laker. As a matter of fact, Kobe Bryant, his last finals that he played in 2010, they beat the Boston Celtics. So while I understand the reason why they're wearing the number 24, it's out of respect, blah, blah, blah. As a Laker fan, I'm going to keep it real. I kind of find it a little bit offensive, because if you're a Laker fan, like I said in the last episode, you can't root for the Boston Celtics. You have to hate the Celtics. You can't like that motherfucking team. And so I just think it's stupid to see them wearing the number 24 in honor of Kobe Bryant, a legendary Laker who kicked their ass in the 2010 NBA Finals. I don't like seeing it there. I mean, I get the respect. Especially because Jason Tatum, he got some one-on-one time with Kobe Bryant back when he was first starting out in the NBA. But come on, man, this is the NBA Finals. You're the Boston Celtics, the ultimate rival of the LA Lakers, and you've got Kobe Bryant on your shoulder. Hopefully, that's some bad juju for y'all, and you end up losing anyway. So, but yeah, that was just something I noticed. I'm like, what the hell is this? Get the fuck out of here with your shit like that, Boston. All right, and so we had a couple things go on in baseball this week. This morning, the Philadelphia Phillies fired their manager, Joe Girardi. There was already kind of rumblings that it was going to happen, and I'm not shocked at all just because the Phillies have not performed well under his tenure as manager. And I actually, you know, Girardi was just an okay manager with the Yankees as well, so it's not like he has all these championships to his resume. I mean, I know he does have one, but I mean, honestly, it's not like he's the greatest manager of all time. And really, the Phillies have not performed well at all since he became the manager. And it's not to say that they have a horrible team. They have some pretty good players. I mean, they got Bryce Harper, one of the best players in the league. They have a pretty solid starting pitching. But just for some reason, they're just not getting it going. And so throughout the week, there's been kind of rumblings that Joe Girardi was going to be losing his job. Not in the middle of the season. You never know when that's going to happen. But he ended up losing his job today just because the Phillies, they have not played well. They did start the season off okay, but they've been on a few losing streaks this season, and they've just really underperformed. So Phillies quick rope on that one, and just ended up firing Joe Girardi this morning. In the Toronto Blue Jays right now, they are on the longest winning streak in the league right now. They have won 8 games in a row, so they're on fire. And to contrast in the opposite direction, the Los Angeles Angels, they are on an 8-game losing streak. So, yeah, shit's not going well for them. They just got their asses handed to them twice yesterday by the Yankees. And Jameson Taillon, he had yet another gem. He had a no-hitter through, I believe, the 8th inning. And then they blew up Shohei Ohtani in the first game. So, yeah, the Angels are not looking too hot right now. And then speaking of the Yankees, the two hottest teams in the league right now who are dominating with record-wise and just they have the best records in the league right now are the New York Yankees and the New York Mets, both of them. They still continue to dominate. Pitching's great. They're overcoming the injuries that they've had. And Aaron Judge, he still leads the league in home runs currently at 19. He's having quite the season. I mean, it's very early to be discussing MVP, but if we were to be discussing that, he's definitely at the top of the list. So yeah, New York, man. Both the New York teams are playing great baseball right now. So that's what's gone on this week with baseball. And then the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs, they continue as well. I did not get to talk about the Eastern Conference matchup just because it hadn't been set yet. At that point, we only had the number 3 seed, the Tampa Bay Lightning, in. And then the New York Rangers, the number 2 seed, they managed to squeak by the Hurricanes and get to the conference finals. And so the matchup is the Tampa Bay Lightning versus the Rangers. Currently, the Rangers were able to get a game 1 win last night, so they have the 1-0 lead currently. I'm actually taking Tampa in this series. I think it's going to go 7 games, and I got Tampa just because they've been here before. They've won, and they're not a team that to take lightly. And I actually think a lot of people have been underrating them, kind of like they did with the Golden State Warriors. And so yeah, I think the Lightning are going to sneak this one out against the Rangers, and I think they're going to win it in 7 games, even though they're down 1-0. And then over in the other matchup right now, the Western Conference matchup here, the Avalanche, they are killing the Edmonton Oilers right now. Actually, they're up 2-0 on the Oilers. And in the first game, it was a high-scoring affair. I can't recall exactly the score, but it was something crazy, like 12-10 or something. I don't know. They just scored a crazy amount of points. But Colorado, man, they are just chugging along. I mean, they've made this postseason look real easy. The Oilers are still a good team, and they could still definitely at least hopefully tie this up. But right now, man, Colorado is looking like the team to beat in the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs right now. Now also in the college baseball championship, that's all set right now for the College Baseball World Series. And that actually begins today. The regionals begin today. And I'm actually going to go ahead and give you kind of a bracket breakdown of what I expect to happen in the College Baseball World Series here. Let's go ahead and just name off the national top 16 seeds. There's actually more teams than I'm going to name off in this entire tournament, but the top 16 are what matters the most. So number one, Tennessee, number two, Stanford, number three, Oregon State, number four, Virginia Tech, number five, Texas A&M, number six, Miami, the U, number seven, Oklahoma State, number eight, East Carolina, number nine, Texas Longhorns, baby, hook 'em horns, motherfucker, 10, North Carolina, 11, Southern Miss, 12, Louisville, 13, Florida, 14, Auburn, 15, Maryland, and 16, Georgia Southern. So those are the top 16 seeds. And basically in this regionals round, there is four teams in each kind of like category. And they basically, these four teams kind of play like a round robin against each other. And whoever wins out of that round robin moves on to the super regionals. And so each bracket basically has four teams to start. And then it starts breaking off once we get to the super regionals and so on. So let's go ahead and start off with the number one overall seed, Tennessee. Their bracket is going to be Tennessee, Alabama State, Campbell, and Georgia Tech. I have Tennessee moving on to the Super Regionals from that bracket. Then next is Georgia Southern, UNC Greensboro, Texas Tech, and Notre Dame. I have Georgia Southern moving on in that one. Then in the next bracket is my Texas Longhorns, Air Force, DBU, and Louisiana Tech. I have my Texas Longhorns moving on in that bracket, of course. Then the next bracket we have East Carolina, Coppin State, Coastal Carolina, and Virginia. I have Virginia winning that bracket. Then Texas A&M, Oral Roberts, Louisiana, TCU. I have TCU moving on in that one, even though I kind of wanted to choose Oral Roberts just because they have Oral in their name. And then next bracket is Louisville, Southern Missouri State, Michigan, and Oregon. I have Louisville moving on in that one. Then next bracket is Florida, Central Michigan, Liberty, and Oklahoma. I have Florida moving on in that one. And then next bracket, Virginia Tech versus Wright State, or with Wright State, Columbia, and Gonzaga. And I have Virginia Tech moving on. So that's one side of the bracket. And then the opposite side of the regionals, we have Stanford, Binghamton, UC Santa Barbara, and Texas State. I have Stanford moving on. Then we've got the next bracket, Maryland, LIU, UConn, Wake Forest. I have Wake Forest moving on. Next bracket, North Carolina, Hofstra, VCU, and Georgia. I have North Carolina moving on. Then Oklahoma State, Missouri State, Grand Canyon, and Arkansas. I have Oklahoma State moving on in that one. Then the next bracket, Miami, the U, Canisius, Ole Miss in Arizona. I have Miami moving on that one. Then the next bracket, Southern Miss, Army West Point, Kennesaw State, and LSU. I have Southern Miss moving on in that one. Then next bracket is Auburn, Southeastern Louisiana, Florida State, and UCLA. I have UCLA moving on in that one. And then last bracket in the regionals is Oregon State, New Mexico State, San Diego, and Vanderbilt, and I have Vanderbilt moving on in that one. So moving on to the Super Regionals, my next matchup would be Tennessee versus Georgia Southern. I have Tennessee moving on in that matchup. Then Texas Longhorns versus Virginia. I, of course, have my Longhorns moving on in that one. Then TCU versus Louisville. I have TCU moving on in that one. Florida versus Virginia Tech. I have Virginia Tech moving on in that one. Then Stanford versus Wake, I have Stanford moving on. North Carolina versus Oklahoma State, I have Oklahoma State moving on. Then Miami versus Southern Miss, I have Miami moving on. And then UCLA versus Vanderbilt, I have UCLA moving on, even though that's a long shot, because Vanderbilt, they are the defending national champions, if you didn't know. So that would make my Men's College World Series round end up being Tennessee versus my Texas Longhorns, which at this point, Unfortunately for them, Tennessee is the best team in college baseball, and I think it's going to be very difficult for them to overcome such a great team. So unfortunately, I have my Texas Longhorns losing to Tennessee in that round. Then TCU versus Virginia Tech, I have TCU moving on. TCU actually is one of the best teams in college baseball, especially over in the Big 12, so, and they've had a pretty solid season, so I've got them moving on. Then Stanford versus Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State is the 7th overall seed, and Stanford's number 2. So these are two very good teams, but there's just something about Oklahoma State that they just play great baseball, and I have them moving on. And then I have Miami versus UCLA. Once again, I think it's a stretch to have UCLA here, but even so, I definitely don't think they'll be able to beat Miami. Miami's the number 6 team in the nation right now. So I have them losing to Miami because Miami is a great baseball team, by the way. So then that would make the next round would be Tennessee versus TCU. I have Tennessee moving on in that one. And then Oklahoma State versus Miami. I have Oklahoma State moving on that one. So my championship would end up being Tennessee versus Oklahoma State. And ultimately, I have Tennessee winning the national championship because they are the best team in college baseball, and it would actually be pretty shocking if they end up not winning the national championship this year. So that's how my college baseball championship breaks down. We'll see how that goes. And like I said, those games begin tonight and run through the weekend. And then, not a lot's been going on in the NFL. But this is basically the last stretch until training camps begin at the end of July. Right now, you have some teams participating in OTAs, which are basically optional optional practices, and you don't have to attend. Certainly, it seems a lot of players are attending, but some aren't, and it's not a big deal if they don't. Sometimes if there's like contract disputes, it might mean something, but so far nothing really major has happened during them. But it's really the only thing going on right now in NFL. And so there are a few, trades that could possibly be made. There's still some free agents out there. So I expect to see some movement here, but nothing major is going to really be happening from now until training camp begins, because OTAs are going on right now. Then they're going to actually have mandatory camp, mini camps starting, I believe, at the end of this month. And then they kind of let the beginning of July, they let that sit. And then end of July is usually when all the teams start reporting for their training camps. So not a lot goes on in the NFL right now. It's just, it's what you refer to as like the dead time of the NFL. And like I said, it's just because there's no draft. There's nothing going on until training camp. So I do have some storylines that I would like to throw out there that are lingering. But first, I would like to say rest in peace, unfortunately, to Marion Barber. He was a running back for the Dallas Cowboys years ago. And unfortunately, he's only 38 years old, and he was found dead earlier this week in his apartment. Still not really no word on what happened, but if you have kept up with Marion Barber over the years, which I have, Marion Barber, he was a solid running back for the Cowboys. You can't look at him and go, oh my God, he's the greatest running back of all time. Obviously not. He doesn't touch Emmitt Smith, but he had some good years in him, and he was one of the hardest runners you will ever see. I mean, he would just take on motherfuckers at the line. I mean, there's this one 2-yard run he had that is just literally one of the craziest 2-yard runs you'll ever see, just because of the way he was fighting to get the 2 yards. So he was a bruiser back. He did end up going to the Chicago Bears after that. And then just over his time after football, he's been arrested a couple times. And he just really, you could tell life has not been good for him post-NFL career. So the fact that he was found dead is just even more tragic. Like I said, nothing has been said about whether it was like a suicide or a drug overdose or who knows what. But unfortunately, Marion Barber has passed away at the age of 38. And, you know, rest in peace, man. He was a good Cowboy. And it's just sad to hear that happen. Let's move on to some of these storylines going on. Also in the NFL, they announced actually yesterday, which I think is a great thing because there's no need for this anymore. But basically the NFL has removed all of their COVID protocols. They're not going to be testing anymore. It's really just going to be live your life. And that's actually what the whole world should be doing because it's essentially turned into what it's going to be a regular thing that's going to stick with us forever and be kind of like the common cold or the flu. And if you want to take precautions, you can go ahead right ahead and do that. But if you want the rest of us healthy people to do it, you can go right ahead and fuck yourself. And that's basically what the NFL is saying is we're not going to be doing that bullshit anymore. And I think that's great because there's no need for it. So we're going to have a completely normal season for the NFL. There's not going to be any of this. You're missing games due to COVID. There's going to be none of this masks unless you want to wear them. Bullshit. It's going to be all normal football, which is great. I mean, last year was pretty much normal football, but it's nice that we're not going to have to hear players missing due to COVID anymore. So that's great. And it's a good sign for life because that's the way and direction we should all be headed right now in all fucking facets of life when it comes to stupid-ass COVID. All right, so now let's move on to these few NFL storylines that I was thinking about need some resolution prior to training camp, and I expect something to happen with some of these. And some of them are also just questions I'm looking at into the season. And so first off, I want to start off with the Carolina Panthers and their quarterback situation. What the hell are they doing at quarterback? You know, I know they drafted a guy and, but like, it seems like, their coach, he's on the hot seat this year. So usually that means you're not going to be throwing a rookie into the fire. Just because chances are your season's not going to be very good. So I'm kind of flummoxed with what's going on with the Carolina Panthers and their quarterback situation because they haven't really done anything. It sounds like they're kind of in the market for Jimmy G or Baker Mayfield, and I'll get to both of them in a bit here. But it doesn't sound like they're too keen on it. I'm not saying, hey, you have to go after either one of them, but it's just kind of odd that, like, they don't really have a quarterback. Like, at all, besides a rookie who hasn't done shit. And then they have Sam Darnold, too, but in my personal opinion, I kind of feel like that experiment went south way too quick last year, so I don't think you can really trust Sam Darnold to be the guy. I mean, I know he had to battle through some injuries, and he did start the season off hot, but, I mean, for the most part, he was pretty disappointing, and if I were a Carolina Panthers fan, I don't think I would be happy about the quarterback situation as it sits, but I just kind of think it's weird that out of all the teams that needed quarterbacks, the Panthers were one of them, and they're like the only one that hasn't made a major move other than drafting a rookie, and like I said, you can't trust a rookie to be getting you to the playoffs. That usually if you have a rookie quarterback, that means your team sucks. So it's kind of odd to see them be so, it doesn't seem like they have any urgency to fix the quarterback position at this point in time when I think they're like the one team in the league that really needs to think about the quarterback situation pretty much more than anybody at this point. So that I think is going to be an interesting storyline to see if any moves are made or if they just kind of stick to what they got. And then the next topic coming out of NFL that I think is a storyline to look at prior to training camp is the Kyler Murray drama. Now, he did show up to the optional team activities this week. So that is actually a good sign. It kind of actually looks like they're pointing in the right direction to have no more drama, but you really never know. I just kind of think starting the season off with that kind of drama, it's not a good thing. So we'll see what happens with the Cardinals throughout the rest of this offseason and then throughout the rest of the season. But I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Kyler Murray, if he's going to be throwing temper tantrums, if he's going to show up to any more of these these practices. I mean, if he's showing up to the optional one, I don't see why he would hold out anymore. But I mean, honestly, you just never know. And we'll see how that drama goes. But then other drama that actually is real drama, still at least currently in this point in time, is Deebo Samuel and the San Francisco 49ers. They're still at a stalemate. He actually did not show up to the OTAs this week. And there's rumblings that he's probably not going to show up to training camp if he is still with the 49ers. So we'll see what happens there. Are they going to trade him? Are they going to keep him? It doesn't sound like they've really been active with it on the trade market. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens with the situation between Deebo Samuel and the San Francisco 49ers. Also, another team I'm looking at who I think needs some improvement at a specific position are the Baltimore Ravens. And what are they doing at the wide receiver position? I know a lot of the talk is about Lamar Jackson because, you know, he's in the last year of his contract. And so, you know, he's going to be looking for an extension and obviously he's going to get paid. And that's what everybody seems to be focusing on. But what I think is weird is that they traded away their best wide receiver, Hollywood Brown, who wasn't that great of a receiver. He's a decent receiver, but they traded him away and he was really their only major weapon besides their tight end. But you need a good receiver, especially for Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson is such a great, versatile quarterback that it sucks that he doesn't at least have a halfway decent wide receiver out there for him. And I just think it's weird that the Ravens traded away his best weapon and they have yet to do anything about getting him a new guy. Now, maybe they're going to be in the mix for Deebo Samuel because I think that would be a huge addition to their team. If you got Lamar Jackson, somebody like Deebo Samuel, you better watch out for that offense because they would just be a highly, highly potent offense. Because, you know, Deebo is the type of receiver who he's good out in the open field and he can catch and he's fast, but he's also great in the ground game. And it sounds like he does want to get away from that because he has started becoming basically like the primary running back in San Francisco. So it sounds like he doesn't really want to do that anymore. But maybe the Ravens, since they already have Lamar, then if you add in Deebo and then their ground attack, they wouldn't need to use Deebo that much as a runner, but he would be a great weapon to have. So I just kind of look at that and go, they should probably look to that route. I don't recall who's still out there in free agency, or maybe they might be thinking about some other things. But I think they really, really need to get Lamar Jackson a wide receiver, because if they don't, I don't know how they're going to fare in the playoffs, because, you know, their division is kind of up in the air if you really think about it. I mean, the Steelers, they're coming off of an awful season, and their team's not really that good, and they're really not expected to be a competitive team this season. So you look at the Steelers, and they're probably not going to be a good team. The Bengals, while they are coming off of being the AFC champs, they did lose the Super Bowl, though, and usually teams that lose the Super Bowl have a bad season the next year. So you can't really count them in. Now, I don't really expect the Bengals to be awful, but at the same time, you can't really expect them to be great next year. There's no guarantee of that. But they should be a good offensive team. And then the Browns, they're also up in the air, not just because of Deshaun Watson, but I just don't think they're that great of a team overall. They're still, they don't have an identity. So you really can't say any of these teams in the AFC North are going to really compete against the Ravens. So the Ravens, if you really look at it, should probably win their division. But it's once they get into the postseason, if they do get into the postseason, where it's going to be a problem. Because, you know, you got the Chiefs, who are a high-powered offense. You got the Bills, who are a high-powered offense. It's just this whole league is built on high-powered offense. And the Ravens aren't really going to have a high-powered offense. They're just going to have a good quarterback whose skills are going to start dwindling, and he's got nobody to throw the ball to. And so I just think the Ravens really need to do something at the wide receiver position between now and training camp just to help Lamar out. Then another storyline I'm looking at in the NFL prior to training camp is Jimmy G and Baker Mayfield. Both of them are still on their teams. You know, Jimmy G's still a 49er. Baker Mayfield's still a Cleveland Brown. I don't expect Baker to still be a Cleveland Brown as the season begins, but you really never know. It doesn't sound like the trade market's really heating up for either one of them. Jimmy G, mostly because of his injuries. Baker, he suffered a lot of injuries, but I just don't think a lot of people think he's worth the headache because he is a guy who doesn't really play the game, if you will. And by that, I mean he doesn't really, you know, you're supposed to speak to the media in a certain way, in a stupid kind of like bullshitty way. And you're kind of just supposed to be vague most of the time, where he's more in your face and he's more brash, but he's also not that great of a quarterback. And so when you really weigh what you want to do with Baker is like, do we want to put up with the headache or do we want to just deal with what we got? So it sounds like the Panthers have been trying to make a move for Baker Mayfield. I don't think he would really improve their team drastically, but I think he's better than Sam Darnold and the rookie. I believe it's Malik Willis who they ended up drafting. Regardless, I think Baker Mayfield would be a better selection. But I also understand that they don't want to take on his contract. So they basically want Cleveland to take on his contract. And I kind of think that's what's going to end up happening in the end, is that whoever ends up with Baker Mayfield, the Browns are going to have to end up taking the majority of his contract because they're not going to be able to get rid of him either way. And having him on the roster is just an absolute waste of time just because I don't think personally Baker, and even if I was Baker, I wouldn't be showing up to play with the Cleveland Browns either. They're fucking assholes in my opinion if I'm Baker Mayfield, because they went and looked for another quarterback, and that's cool. You can look for another quarterback, but bitches, I ain't playing for y'all. So I don't see Baker Mayfield in training camp with the Browns. I definitely see some type of trade or maybe even a release happening, but yeah, that's a storyline out there. But also Jimmy G, man, it's sounding more and more that the 49ers are really not convinced on Trey Lance. So I really wouldn't be shocked if we still see Jimmy G in a San Francisco 49ers uniform when it's all said and done, even though it looks like they really do want to trade him. I kind of feel like if you're going with Trey Lance, you got to go with Trey Lance and you got to get rid of Jimmy G. If you're really not sold on him, then you got to stick with Jimmy G and you got to stick with Jimmy G all the way. You can't just do this shit again this year where it's like, are we going to keep him next year? Is it going to be Trey Lance next year? What are we doing? Like, nah, you can't do that every single fucking year. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with those two quarterbacks. Like I said, with Baker, I kind of see him ending up with the Carolina Panthers. And Jimmy G, my best guess with him is I think he's going to stay with the 49ers. I think they really soured the trade market by not trading him immediately after they drafted Trey Lance last year. So I kind of see Jimmy G still with the Niners, but it'll be interesting to see what happens with those two quarterbacks. And then speaking of quarterbacks, the last issue I was thinking about, that's a storyline, prior to training camp in the NFL, is going to be the, Deshaun Watson legal, issues here. Because the longer this goes on, it's not looking good for Deshaun. This is kind of why, most, rich people pay people off, because the further you actually dig deep into these things, the worse it actually is for the person being sued. And that's usually why people get paid off. I know everybody thinks it's the almighty money grab and we're all supposed to act like all rich guys are the greatest people alive and not ever one of them have ever been a rapist or have ever put anybody in a bad situation. They're all the greatest people ever. And every one of us who is around them just wants their money. Nah, the reason why they usually pay people off is because they're guilty or there is some truth in there at some point. With Deshaun Watson, it's really not looking good for him at all, especially legally. Obviously, he can't be charged criminally at all, but there's still these civil suits, and now one other person joined the civil suits this week, and there's the possibility of another one or two more joining in. So it's not looking good for him. Also, if you actually read his depositions, he is really, really digging himself a grave. All you people who thought this was just a setup by the Houston Texans and that that they're the reason why that these all came out. No, I'm sorry. Deshaun Watson's own words burst a whole bubble into that theory, y'all. He even says in his own words that the Houston Texans knew nothing about these massage therapists that he was visiting. So sorry, y'all. It's not the Texans. It's not the big, bad, evil billionaires. It's looking more and more like Deshaun Watson is just a dick-dangling asshole who thinks everybody wants to suck his motherfucking dick. Also, too, he's got this cool little this person who does own a massage parlor, which sounds like this person who owns a massage parlor is allegedly pimping their people out, and some of these massage therapists don't want to participate in that shit. And apparently Deshaun Watson gave this massage therapist pimp $5,000 for, quote, being a nice guy, is their quote. So yeah, usually you just give out $5,000 just to be a nice guy, right? Yeah, no, not looking good. So with that being said, at some point, I mean, the NFL is saying they're doing their due diligence and investigating, and I'm sure they have been. I'm not saying they aren't, but it's just whenever they say that shit, you know it's mostly bullshit, and they just really want this to go away. But unfortunately, with Deshaun Watson, it's not just going to go away. And from the rumblings at this current point in time, it sounded like he's definitely going to get suspended. I've always said he should get suspended just because of the precedent the league has set is that basically, even if you aren't charged criminally, the fact that this you're making the league look bad is good enough to be suspended. And now there's actually a new way they go through these type of suspensions is basically there's actually a judge. And this judge has no affiliation to the NFL or any of the parties involved, so they're a neutral party. And basically, the judge looks at everything, goes through the rules, and they decide what the suspension should be. Then, of course, Deshaun Watson can appeal, and then we see what happens after the appeal. But basically now an actual judge makes the call on the suspension. So who knows what's going to happen. But I think Deshaun Watson's definitely going to be suspended for this season. And there's also rumblings that the NFL may actually add a little caveat in, because since these legal issues with Deshaun Watson are more than likely not going to be settled until either next year or maybe even possibly 2024, that they're going to add a little caveat in that you may be suspended this year. Let's say he's suspended for 8 games this season. You're going to be suspended 8 games. But if you lose all of these civil trials, we can suspend you, when that happens as well. So say like he loses, some of these civil trials in 2023 and the league decides to suspend him for some more, games, they can do that, or at least that's what it sounds like they might end up doing. But Deshaun Watson, not looking good for you, homie. I didn't think it was going to look good for you, because when you have that many accusations, it's usually true. But you know, this day and age, we, for some odd reason, think that rich people are really great, amazing human beings when chances are they're a big scumbag. Kind of like how everybody's like cheering on about Johnny Depp when, first of all, both of them lost that trial. They both were found to be liars and held liable against each other. But what I discovered most about these two people is they're just absolutely atrocious, awful, disgusting human beings who wasted the court's time on their disgusting, loser, toxic relationship. But y'all keep cheering on these fucking awesome rich people that you think are just so fucking amazing who would shit on you the second they could. So go fuck yourselves with your stupid, idiotic celebrity goddamn worship, man. This fucking world. So dumb. So dumb. But let's move on to my top five list this week. I decided to do something a little fun. Poke fun. But I also wanted to make it topical. So we're going to do this is going to be on the Boston Celtics, but I'm going to be poking fun at the Boston Celtics because you know me, I'm a Lakers fan. I can't be rooting for them Boston Celtics. So I decided to make my top five this week, the top five greatest finals lost by the Boston Celtics. Now, if you are an actual NBA fan or a Boston Celtics fan, you might ask yourself, Katie, how did you find five? Because the Boston Celtics overall record in the NBA finals is 17-4. So they've only lost four NBA finals technically. So this is how I'm going to make it top five. So I'm starting off with number five, the 2022 NBA Finals versus the Golden State Warriors. Yeah, this year's NBA Finals. Now, obviously, they won game one, but I predicted that they're gonna that the Warriors are going to win this series. And so I'm going to stick with that prediction, and I'm going to put that at number five just to be a fucking asshole. So hopefully they lose, and hopefully that will be number five. So that's number five on my top five greatest finals lost by the Boston Celtics. Number four is in 1958. They lost versus the St. Louis Hawks. The Hawks ended up winning in six games. They won the series 4-2. That is the Hawks' first and only title. As a matter of fact, this is the St. Louis Hawks are now the Atlanta Hawks. I believe they actually ended up moving from St. Louis a season or two after they won this championship. Also of note, this is the only finals that Red Auerbach, the coach of the Boston Celtics, lost. His one and only time he lost in the NBA Finals. That's insane. For the Hawks, in Game 6, one of their legendary Hall of Fame players, Bob Pettit, he scored 50 points in Game 6. And actually, he scored their last 19 of their last 21 points in Game 6 to take that series home. So that's number four on my top five greatest finals lost by the Boston Celtics. Number three. Now you're going to see my top three. It's biased for sure at number one. But, I mean, these top three are the fucking best because you know why? All three of them are losses to my Lakers. Even though the Lakers lost many motherfucking times to the Celtics. So I could probably do a top five. Actually, I think probably a top 10 list of how many times the Boston Celtics kicked the Lakers' ass. So fuck off, Boston. Let me just have these three, okay? You fucking assholes. All right, so number three is 1987. They lost to the Los Angeles Lakers in six games. The Lakers took the series 4-2. This was the 10th time the Lakers and the Celtics faced each other in the NBA Finals. So like I said, I could probably, and maybe at some point I will do a top 10 list of and rank all of the matchups between the Lakers and the Celtics. That's actually probably a good idea that I might do maybe next show or maybe for a future show. We'll see, but that would actually probably be a good one. But this was the 10th matchup between this storied rivalry. The Lakers were by far the best team in the league that season. Magic Johnson, he won MVP that year. He just had a phenomenal season. Unfortunately, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, this was kind of like the end of his era. While he was still a great player, he was not the dominating force he once was. This finals basically had an iconic moment in it called the Magic Johnson Baby Skyhook, which was basically a shout-out to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who taught him that, of course. And also, this was the last time the Boston Celtics were in the NBA Finals all the way up until the year 2008 when they beat my Lakers, which pissed me the fuck off. But there you go. All right, so number two on my top five greatest finals lost by the Boston Celtics, 1985 versus the Los Angeles Lakers. That's the year I was born. The Lakers won in six games again. They won this series 4-2. This was the first time that they ever beat the Boston Celtics in the NBA Finals. And this was a year that the Boston Celtics were one of the best teams in the league. Larry Bird actually won the league MVP that year. The Lakers were able to get the win. This was the Showtime Lakers. Magic Johnson had a great season. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar had a great season. And they just were rolling. Both teams, these were the two best teams in the league. And this was who it should have been. And it just was a battle back and forth. But my Los Angeles Lakers got the win. And so number one on my top five greatest finals lost by the Boston Celtics, the 2010 NBA Finals versus the Los Angeles Lakers. I had to put this number one because this is my favorite NBA Finals of all time. Kobe Bryant, Lakers win, 7-game series. Oh my God, I can't tell you how tense this series was for myself. I can't imagine what it was like for the actual players and coaches and people involved in this team, in these teams. But man, like, every game was a battle. I mean, you got the Celtics with Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, Ray Allen. They're just killing it. Then you've got the Lakers with Kobe Bryant and Pau Gasol and Lamar Odom and Ron Artest. Like, it was just such a battle. Every game was just, it was so tense. It would come down to the last seconds of every game, including Game 7, which was crazy because it's literally one of Kobe Bryant's worst games of all time. I remember watching the game, and I was just so frustrated because I'm like, how are we going to win a Game 7 with Kobe playing this shitty? Well, guess what? The rest of the team stepped it up, especially Lamar Odom, who usually disappeared during the postseason. He was never known for being that guy during the postseason. He'd have great regular seasons, postseason would come along, and he would just fade away. But Game 7, he showed up, and that was all we fucking needed. Pau Gasol had a great game, and it's just my favorite NBA finals of all time. I will never forget when they won Game 7, just watching them. Oh, and it just was such a cherry on top because they beat the Boston Celtics. You know, I always love to see the Lakers win. I've seen them win, what, freaking like seven championships? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, I've seen them win 6 championships in my lifetime that I remember vividly. And that one was just by far the best. And it was just such a tense matchup. And so that's why I had to put that in number one. So, obviously it was real difficult to find 5 because the goddamn Celtics just get to the finals and always win. So I'm rooting for Golden State, of course, but they are down. And so we'll see what happens in Game 2 on Sunday night. But we got baseball all weekend, got those NHL Stanley Cup playoffs going on. You got the college baseball national championships going on. So lots of sports this weekend. Enjoy it, and I will talk to you all on Monday.